second here? Okay, is that good? Little green light is on, yes. I will turn it on and off. On? Hello? Okay, we got on. Oh, I can hear that now, yeah. Okay, and I also want to say welcome to the people online. This morning we have the Inland Northwest Unitarian Universalist Committee, community of Spokane is visiting us online. They join us the second Sunday of every month. So it's nice to have them and everyone else who is online this morning as well. If you're a visitor, we ask that you fill out those forms. They're in the seat in front of you. Then you can be getting, if you fill out information, you can get our e-blasts and other communication about our services. So we ask that you do that. It is now time for you. Oh, I wanted to mention coffee hour. We will have coffee after the service downstairs and online. If you want to join with people, there was a link in this morning's email that came to you that has the Zoom link to coffee online. So I'd like you to all take one moment and greet each other. Say hello. Say quickly, popcorn, as many people as you can. Oh, good. Good work. Hello. Good morning. Good morning. Good to see you. Good morning. Good to see you. Rosie, it's lovely to have you here. Hi. Nice to see you, Lucy. I think it is on. There isn't one. It'll just be. No, don't worry about it. And now I'd like to invite Ashley up to give us a stewardship moment.
Hello. Yes, hello. Good morning, everyone. My name is Ashley Ulmer. I'm excited to both be your lay leader this morning and also was asked to read a bit of a stewardship piece. Competition. My name is Ashley Ulmer. Like I said, my pronouns are she and they. I have been coming to WIF since 2018, since my kids Ada and Oliver were about 3 and 6. A person who believes volunteering is an honor, I was met with many chances to fill needs, contribute to projects, share my resources, and become part of the greater good here at WIF. Around every corner, there were chances to work with other woofers and young families doing crafts, service projects, serving food, cleaning dishes, pulling weeds, joining in discussion about topics with young families, chalice circles, demonstrations of activism, contributing to groups and committees both socially and functionally. For me, being a steward of WIF is to be a channel for the energy that truly ignites this fellowship. One could think of stewardship as a demand, an assignment, or a task, but here at WIF, reaping the benefits of this community, seeing the people with needs thrive, seeing projects get completed, observing the way that one small task can wrap the whole community into an evolving sense of meaning has been so gratifying for me and my kids. The joy being not only in the outcomes of the service, but also by growing in community with other woofers over shared purpose, knowing more and knowing them more. We all have a talent or a skill to share. Having a nursing background for me made it a natural place for me in the committees like the reopening committee, who met to discern the risk of meeting and how reopening would look like after the pandemic had starved us of our needed connection. Then the natural transition to the CareNet team as a communicator has been so satisfying, as it is just trading weeks of call with other communicators where we field requests for community assistance, rides, meal trains, visitation, and the like. We're both hiring and taking requests. The hospitality committee called me to attend knowing how much I like to chat. We brainstormed ways to warm up the welcome and meet the need we all have to stir the community soup that we all share. Most recently, I've joined the group of lay leaders so inspired by the flow of the services. You say, well, but I'm not a member. Am I welcome just to dive in? The answer is yes. For me, stewardship itself led to my membership at WWF, not the other way around. By the time I became a member of WWF in 2022, I had developed a purpose to commit to membership. Membership specifically meaning agreeing to uphold the principles of the UU Fellowship, pledging biannual contribution financially to the longevity of the WWF community, and of course signing the membership roll to this effect, along with so many others who you see around you today. Of course, we all know that with resources, time, energy, money, or creativity, sometimes it flows and sometimes it slows. And that range is also acceptable here. Stewardship at WWF calls for willingness to get excited, get involved, take chances, be authentic and humble, and trust that what you can't do, others can do with you and will, because together we rise and shine as a fellowship. We lift each other's spirits and smiles. We lift our arms when someone needs a hug. We lift a tissue when someone has a tear. We lift our voice in laughter with all of these great folks. We lift our spoons in communion like group soup and family dinners. We lift a buck when inspired to pledge and donate. We lift our voice when there is a need. Being in stewardship here at WWF means that being present is the right place anytime. I also wanted to mention that we have reached our goal, or not yet reached our goal, of $225,000 in this year's stewardship campaign. We are currently at $157,284 for the visual folks. And so this is kicking off our last week of the stewardship drive. We have some QR codes downstairs where if you want to get into the pledging mode, you can click on those in coffee hour today and start helping us get closer to the goal. Thank you.
Thank you, Ashley. I'd like to invite Isaac up to light our chalice this morning. We light this chalice. Isaac lights this chalice for all of us. It's the symbol of our faith. I need matches. The chalice is the symbol of our faith, and we hope that it reminds us that peace and calm of the present, the peace and calm of the present, it's each and every person's birthright. Let us say our affirmation together. Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful and what is wondrous. Let us open our minds to learn what is true and what is mysterious. Let us open our hearts to love ourselves and our neighbors.
For our opening reading, call to worship, we come together this morning to remind one another to rest for a moment on the forming edge of our lives, to resist the headlong tumble into the next moment, until we claim for ourselves awareness and gratitude, taking the time to look into one another's faces and see their communion, the reflection of our own eyes. This house of laughter and silence, memory and hope is hallowed by your presence together.
So this morning we're going to be singing the meditation on breathing, and it's probably better if you stay seated. We're going to start with the drone, which is the breathe in, breathe out part, which is at the bottom of the screen. And then after we do that one time, we're going to add the melody. Graham will be leading that. So everybody, if you want to stay on the drone, stay on the drone. If you want to go to the melody. And then the last part's the descant that I'll be leading. And then we will back out the same way. So the descant is the shortest part. And then we'll have two parts, and then we'll end with the drone again. So
I'm the drone.
Thank you, Spencer. Ready?
breathe in,
I breathe,
taking us into our moments of gratitude and giving, we have Pema Chodron's words. Remind yourself in whatever way is personally meaningful that it is not in your best interest to reinforce thoughts and feelings of unworthiness. Even if you've already taken the bait and feel the familiar pull of self-denigration, marshal your intelligence, please. Your courage and your humor in order to turn the tide. Let us now read our affirmation. Oh, okay. Let's do the offering first. Now that sweet affirmation. Let us be grateful when we are able to give, for many do not have that privilege. Let us be grateful for all those who share their gifts with us, and we are enriched by their giving. And let us be grateful even for our needs, so that we may learn from the generosity of others.
So now is time for all ages. Any kids who are in the back who want to come forward, you're welcome to. So our book this morning is called Breathe and Be by Kate Combs. I breathe slowly in. I breathe slowly out. My breath is a river of peace. I am here in the world. Each moment, I can breathe and be. What am I thinking? What comes and goes in my mind? I watch my thoughts. They swim like little fish. They shine blue, green, red, and yellow. There's a quiet place in my head, like an egg hidden in a nest. A place I go when the world is loud, a moss-green forest with birds. I see the world new, my friends with bright sneakers, the fresh smell of grass, a line of ants winding by. I see each for the first time. Sometimes I'm a cloud. Sometimes a mountain or a stone, sometimes a river, a small seed or a great tree, but I am always me. When drays crash thunder and throw lightning around, I am still watching. I am a calm umbrella inside the blue and gray storm. How I rush, thoughts flutter and dart like birds. Slow down, thoughts. Come quietly with me. There is a time to breathe and be. Some days I bark and snap like a dog. Instead, I will be a tree. Leaves, branches, roots, patient in summer, in fall, winter, and spring. I watch the stream. Each thought is a floating leaf. One leaf is worry. Another leaf is sadness. The leaves drift softly away. I see myself by the ocean, toes touching sand, fingers finding a shell at the edge of the blue water. Where is your quiet place? Tomorrow's an egg that hasn't hatched. Yesterday is a bird that has flown. But today is real. Here now, this minute, the true wings. The caterpillar and the tadpole are becoming something more, and I am becoming more me, my heart filling up with it. My feet touch earth, my hands touch tall grasses, my face touches the sky. I run through the morning. I am alive in this world. I breathe slowly in. I breathe slowly out. My breath is a pathway of peace moving softly through me. Each day, I can breathe and be. It's now time to sing our children to their classes. It's time to take a deep breath and settle into your seats. This is the time in our service when we remember our joys and our sorrows. We remember that life is always made up of happiness and joy and struggles and challenges. And it is good to have a community of compassion that holds all of that various parts of life with us. So today I'd like you to just take a moment and notice what the joys are right now in your life and the things that are hard that you're holding. And when the music plays, you can come down the aisle and place a stone in the water for your joy or your sorrow. And know that this community, dropping those stones in water, represents the way that there is those who care for you and care about your life. If you'd like to say something, you may speak into the mic and just in a sentence or so, share your joy or your sorrow, or you're absolutely welcome to just drop the stone in silence. And one last stone for all the joys and sorrows in the world. It's now time for our meditation. Oh, no. It's time for our song.
We'll sing this song a few times through. So the first time we'll be just singing through without any repeats. And the second time we'll take all the repeats that are shown on the page. It's again your teal hymnal in 1011. Can you get a note?
Return again, return again, return to the home of your soul. Return to who you are. Return to what you are. Return to where you are. Born and reborn again. Return again.
Tradition. The meditation this morning is from Jill Bolte Taylor's book, My Stroke of Insight, which is what I'm going to be talking about later in the sermon. So here's the meditation. So draw in a big, deep breath, if that's comfortable to your body. Go ahead, just pull the air into your chest and watch your belly swell. What is going on inside your body? Is it in a comfortable position? Is your stomach queasy or calm? Are you hungry? How full is your bladder? Do you have a dry mouth? Do your cells feel tired or refreshed? How is your neck? Take a pause from any of those distracting thoughts you've been having and observe just your body being alive for a moment. Where are you sitting? How is the lighting? How do you feel about where you are sitting? Sorry, everybody. Relax into your body. Take another deep breath, and now another. Relax into your body. Soften your jaw and that furrow in your brow. And revel in the fact that in this moment, you are a living, thriving being. And let that feeling of celebration and gratitude for your life flood through your consciousness and your body. We will sit in this moment for a moment.
We are living the eternal now. The past is gone, the future is tomorrow. When babies cry, all folks slow down. Maybe the moment is talking to you now. We are hanging from a silver streak, knowing each moment is a precious thing. The smell of raindrops in April coming down. Maybe the moment is talking to you now. Now, now, now is the moment. Is tomorrow when babies laugh? All folks slow down. Maybe the moment is talking to you now. Are you alive at this moment? Are you alive? Can you feel it in your soul? Are you alive? Let your heart beat with mine. Jump into the river of time. We are living the eternal now. The past is gone, the future is tomorrow. Smell of raindrops, oh, in April, May, and June. Maybe the moment is talking to you. Maybe the moment is talking to you. Maybe now, maybe love is talking to you right now.
On December 10th, 1997, Jill Bolte Taylor, a brain scientist at Harvard University, woke up to a sharp caustic pain behind her right eye. Jill pressed her hand to her eye. She rarely got ill, so this pain was especially startling. She decided to get up, do her normal morning routine, and see if the pain faded. She stepped onto her cardio glider and began to slide her legs back and forth. The experience was odd. Her body felt weird and disassociated. Instead of being in her body, she felt as if she was watching herself. It was both weird and fascinating. The pain continued to worsen, so Jill decided to take a shower. Her body just wasn't moving correctly, though. Her balance was off, her movements were jerky. It was hard to get across the room. She had to hold on to the wall, and then when she stepped into the tub, she had to lean against the side. Her thoughts began to fragment, and sounds were getting either extremely loud or very silent. Jill tried to figure out what could possibly be wrong with her. But her worry just kept getting pushed away by this overwhelming sense of peace and euphoria. For the first time in her memory, the chattering voice in her brain fell silent. She began to lose all sense of her body as a solid object. Instead, she began to feel like a fluid. She blended into the space around her. The feeling was remarkable and wonderful. For the first time, she felt the true miracle of her body and her life. She stared at her fingers and she just thought how amazing they were. She felt the wonder of that she was a billions of cells just working together to make her life possible. Then this blazing fear crashed through her reverie. You are in danger, it said. You are in danger. She tried to figure out what was wrong and why she was in danger, but then she would just slide back into that feeling of peace and wonder. Suddenly her right arm dropped, paralyzed to her side, and Jill knew instantly she was having a stroke. She didn't know it then, but a congenital arteriovenous malformation had burst, and she was spewing blood all over the left side of her brain. Blood is toxic to neurons, and as it spread, it disabled her left brain functions. The human brain is divided into two halves, the right brain and the left brain. And they collect different information and process it differently. They are connected through the corpus callosum. Thanks, everybody. I practiced like four times this morning on my computer. But there it is. And it connects the two sides, so they help us have a seamless experience of reality. The right brain gathers in streams of sensory data and creates a collage of the present moment. The right brain specializes in the rich, complex vibrancy of the present. For the right brain, there is no time, which is why particularly deeply felt moments feel timeless. It takes the big picture view. The right brain is imaginative and artistic, and it's not bound by rules, such as logic, sequencing, or storytelling. The right brain sees similarities between beings and moments. It experiences the interconnection of all. It is able to imagine life, what life is like for another, and thus is home to empathy and compassion. The left brain is very different. Our left brain uses language and can reason mathematically and otherwise. It makes sense of our experience and communicates that experience to ourselves and others. The left brain takes the moments of our lives as noticed by the right brain and makes them linear in creating a sense of time. It makes patterns, describes things, and uses deductive reasoning. It takes the big picture view of the right brain and breaks it down into pieces that can be communicated and understood. It thinks in details. It creates stories and to make sense of the world and our lives. The left brain chatters at us incessantly with opinions, ideas, lists, worries, and stories. As the morning of December 10th progressed, Jill lost nearly all of the functions of her left brain. The right brain told her life was wonderful, and to just drift into tranquility and euphoria. The left brain used all of its remaining abilities to shout, "Get help! Get help! Get help!" The next period for her was a tug of war between the part of her who just wanted to surrender to this new, peaceful, connected reality and another part that insisted she get help or she would die. As the intense call of the left brain grabbed her attention, she would try to get help. The problem was, the left brain manages all the way we seek help. Jill no longer had the capacity to understand numbers. She didn't remember any of her neighbors, or such people even existed, or that people on the street might help her. The only thing she could think to do was to call for help. She knew to do this, she must use a phone. So she found the phone and sat by it. Remember, this was the pre-cell phone era. But she had no idea how to use the phone or who she might call. Finally, she remembered the people that she worked with, but she could not remember the number at work. She kept drifting off into that warm, peaceful consciousness of the right brain and would forget all about getting help for a while, or anything about remembering phone numbers. But then her left brain would jerk her back. She tried and tried to remember, and finally, numbers flashed into her mind. Or more accurately, a flash of squiggles flashed into her mind, which she was able to write down. She happily discovered the squiggles she wrote down looked very much like the squiggles on the phone. Since the symbol for the number 2 didn't mean anything to her anymore, since the left brain did all symbols, all she could do was look at the physical form of the number and match it to the squiggle on the phone. That is when she discovered an entirely another problem. Since her brain no longer processed linearly, once she dialed the number, she had no idea if she'd already dialed that particular squiggle or not. So she figured out how to use her limp right hand to cover each number as she used it to keep track of where she was. It took 45 minutes, but she made the call, and a friend answered. Then she had another shock. While she recognized her friend's voice, she couldn't understand what he said. He sounded distant and garbled. The part of her left brain that recognized speech had completely shut down. Then she spoke, saying as clearly as she could, "This is Jill. I need help." When she opened her mouth, though, only grunts and groans came out. she had lost the ability to speak as well. Her colleague fortunately recognized her voice and knew she needed help. He spoke in soft, reassuring tones. While she had no idea what he was saying, she understood from the tone of his voice that he was getting help, and she didn't need to worry anymore. It wasn't until she got to the hospital that the left brain surrendered, and Jill surrendered too, the deep peace of her right brain. Jill remembers that time with bittersweetness. She writes, "In the absence of the normal functioning of my left orientation association area, my perception of my physical boundaries was no longer limited to where my skin touched the air. I felt like a genie liberated from a bottle. The energy of my spirit seemed to slow like a great whale gliding through the sea of silent euphoria. Finer than the finest pleasures we can experience as physical beings, this absence of physical boundaries was one of glorious bliss." While she basked in the warmth and safety of eternal peace, the doctor saved her life. She was lucky. While the stroke had been severe, it turned out that while some of her neurons had been killed, most had been merely stunned and could be recovered through the hard work of reactivating them. She would have to relearn everything her left brain did: walking, talking, counting, and writing. She would have to relearn or figure out how to reconnect to the information and memories and understanding she'd lost. Remember, she has a doctorate in neuroscience. It was a lot, remember. Time was critical, and within the day, the neurologist, therapist, and her mother started helping her. The work took enormous energy, and over, she had to make the decision to do the slow, painful work of reclaiming her left brain. Fortunately, much of what she lost returned rather quickly, such as walking and regaining language. Within a few months, she could do and understand enough to live on her own. However, it took her 8 years to fully recover all of her cognitive abilities. Very early in the process, though she knew she did not want to Very early in the process, though, she realized that she did not want to learn everything the left brain She did not want to gain the gifts of the left brain just to lose the peace and joy she found in her right brain. One of the main characteristics of the left brain is its constant chatter. We all know it. Monkey mind, the Buddhists call it. The nattering, incessant talking, the worrying, the planning, the lists, the stories about what has happened and what will happen, and all the judgments we make about ourselves and others. The left brain is concerned about the future and has memories of the past. It pulls us into emotional loops developed through experiences that play again and again, calling into the present fear, hurt, anger, and other emotions from our past. All of these characteristics of the left brain can make life pretty unpleasant for us. I'm sure most of us have experienced that. And that's when Jill discovered what she called my stroke of insight. She learned that she could access that deep inner peace of her right mind at any time that she wanted to. It was a gift that she could use to make her life more joyful and compassionate. Because it is actually our right brain that helps us be able to have empathy and compassion for others. It took learning and a long time to figure out really how to do this. In her pre-stroke life, her left brain had been dominant, and it was judgmental, analytical, and played stories and emotional loops that made her very emotionally reactive, and perhaps she came to understand as sometimes rather unpleasant person. After living in the acceptance of her right brain, she did not want to relearn that easy judgment she had had of herself and of others. She didn't want to relearn whatever made her emotionally reactive and easily angry and argumentative. She discovered that we have choices about which part of our brain will control our perceptions, and we have choices about how we react. We function when we use both halves of our brain, but in any given moment, we can choose to let the left or right brain dominate. We can choose the right brain, the present moment, gratitude, compassion, nurturing, optimistic, and celebratory. Or we can choose the left brain and its ability to organize, describe, judge, analyze, make plans, identify patterns, process very large amounts of information quickly, and communicate. And most of us are very left brain dominant. We live in a culture that values the left brain, and it's what we're trained in. And so that's what we do. We are more likely to organize and judge than to simply appreciate something. We want to know the risks of a new activity instead of just jumping in. We prefer to be doers and get much of the meaning of our lives from doing things instead of just being and appreciating existence. On the journey to recovering her left brain, Jill learned strategies for keeping the difficult parts of her left brain under control, as well as to enter more fully into her right brain as a regular practice of her life. Jill decided that she did not like it when her left brain began spinning negative stories and being judgmental about herself and others. She learned to attend to that voice in her head and see it as just that, a voice in her head. One she could pay attention to, or one she could tell, no, thank you, please be quiet now. What she does when she starts feeling judgmental or angry or out of control is wait 90 seconds for the physiological feeling of the emotion to dissipate. As you've probably noticed, all emotions come with physical sensations in the body. For me, anger makes all my muscles go tight and my heart beats faster. When I'm sad, my throat constricts, my eyes get teary, and my chest hurts. If we don't think about the causes of the feeling, the physical sensation they've shown ends in 90 seconds. Anything that we experience after 90 seconds is because our left brain started talking. It tells us the reasons we should be furious or sad or afraid, and it plays those stories in our minds over and over, keeping those emotions tense and active. As Jill's left brain started to talk again, she watched as her emotions started coming and staying longer than they had before. She knew from all the rehab that she had done that she was actually in control of her brain. If she didn't like a particular emotion or story, she could just tell it to stop. So now when she gets triggered, she simply sits with the feeling. And then as the left brain begins to chime in, she says, I appreciate your ability to think thoughts and feel emotions, but I'm really not interested in thinking these thoughts or feeling these emotions anymore. Please stop bringing this stuff up. Of course, the left brain, as you know, the chatterer it isn't all that excited about quitting, so Jill gets firmer, even speaking, if necessary, out loud to her left brain. If it simply won't listen, she thinks of something that fascinates her or something very joyful to lure the left brain away from some unnecessarily painful emotional loop. Jill has also learned how to enter directly the peaceful state of her right brain. She tries to be present. She uses the meditation that we did this morning and similar practices that help her attend to the sensory information that flows into our body through our senses. She asks, how does it feel to be here right now doing what I'm doing now? When she eats, she attends to the taste and the texture of her food. She notices the smells that surround her. The right brain looks at the big picture. So I just want to, actually, before I go into this next part. So this thing of just noticing your body, they have this exercise called notice five things. So you just sit there and you notice one thing with each of your senses. And it will bring you right to the present for that moment. And it's a lovely trick to do when things are sort of rolling out of control. And the right brain also looks at the big picture. It's in the left at the details. So when Jill wants to activate her right brain, she looks at big pictures. The sky is good. Hills in the distant. A city skyline. And she also listens, that presence thing. What does she hear up close? Really making herself notice. What does she hear that's far away into that big picture? Learning to use the right brain offers so many gifts that so many of us are seeking in our lives, to be more loving, to be more peaceful, more full of gratitude, graceful, joyful, and compassionate. And it's the practices of meditation and mindfulness and prayer that help bring people into these present places. When Jill Bolte Taylor lay in her silent world of peace and joy in the days after her stroke, she was the happiest that she had ever been in her entire life. Everything that had ever mattered to her just didn't anymore. Everything she had strived for, everything she had feared, was gone, and she was fine. She was great, in fact. Coming back to her left brain was really hard, and it was something that she had to decide over and over again to continue to do. But she made that decision because she wanted to tell everybody that there was this other way of being human that we have access to. And she wanted to be able to tell people that. And it hurt, and it was exhausting. And it forced her out of that beautiful nirvana. But every day she remembered her life purpose, to tell the world, peace is truly within you. It is your birthright. So I want us all to remember our birthright, that peace is within us. We often don't have time for questions or thoughts, and I think this is a nice service for that, and we have a few minutes. So, Ashley, do you want to take the microphone around? If anybody has a question, if you're online, you can write it to our tech people, and they can do that, but I didn't ask them, so unsure about that. Does anyone have any questions or comments?
So I'm sure this is my left brain talking, but I'm very glad to know that she had good health care and good health insurance. Because a lot of people would not have had that chance to do that rehab.
That's absolutely true. She worked for Harvard University, so she was, and in the neurology department, so she really had a lot going for her.
Thank you, Tracy, for bringing that to our attention. In 2016, I had a stroke in the recovery room after having some stents placed in my arteries. And my experience was instantaneous. But it was very similar in that I knew what was happening. But the only thing that happened to me was that I couldn't speak coherently. And I called out for help, and of course it came out all garbled. But my immediate thought was, what's going to happen next? and it didn't ever occur to me that this would kill me. Mm-hmm. And I was not afraid. And I was just more and more curiouser and curiouser.
Interesting. Yeah,
and miraculously, and this St. Vincent says they have a particular file on me where they call me the miracle woman. Within 24 hours, I had regained my speech and I was back to normal.
That's
and
lovely.
No one could figure out why.
It's all a lot of mystery.
There it is. It was one of those mysteries, and I am eternally grateful for that.
One of the things that I think is really interesting is we have what we call spiritual practices, which are all mostly practices about being in the present. I mean, even saying the rosary is like that. Like, it's methodical. It just brings you into a humming present. So there's all these practices from traditions all over that help people. people sort of live in that space, meditation, mindfulness, walking labyrinths. There's lots and lots of ways we can come into the present. And I think they're called spiritual practices because they connect us with this interconnectedness that she talks about. And spiritual really is all the things that are interconnected in our lives, our sense of connection to others, to the natural world, all that is. So I've just found that the most fascinating journey of this woman, who was not in any way religious, believe me, before this happened, or spiritual.
There's a British philosopher, Galen Strawson, who thinks a lot about consciousness, and he claims that for himself and for some other people he's talked to, that they don't have a linear sense of themselves, which I guess from your sermons from the left brain, that, you know, themselves 7 years ago, they don't necessarily feel that was them. They don't feel a sense of connection to themselves in the past. And that can be an attractive idea sometimes, but also a scary idea sometimes. And Eleanor thinks it's kind of BS. But I was wondering, I always like to ask if anyone experiences that way, because I haven't met anyone in person who feels that sense of disconnection. And I wonder if it's part of the brain, the left and right,
yeah,
as you're saying.
Yeah, imagine it might be.
I will talk into the microphone. So I don't know why I get this, but when I think back to myself, even 2 years ago or 2 weeks ago, I'm when I don't think about myself in the present moment, it's kind of a separate entity, if that makes sense. I know that person is me, but it's because whatever I was doing isn't happening right now, it feels like kind of a separate existence, if that makes sense. So I don't know. It might not be the same thing, but that's
interesting. So Alana, and then that'll be our last question comment.
I think that I definitely feel a disconnect from the person I was when I was younger, because I've undergone so much shift and change. And I look back at that person I was before, and in this moment I am Alana, I am this person, and that person back then was a product of their environment, was a product of the inputs around her, and so I'm able to separate myself a little bit.
I mean, it's interesting. That is one of the conversation in Buddhist thought, that we are not the same as we were in the past, that you're always being made new in every moment, and that's true in process theology too, so there is... You know, people who talk.
Minutes of dialing and the shower, and we were always told, you know, time is brain. And so it just killed me that it took so long for her to.
I know. So we are going to rise and sing Peace Like a River. We're just going to sing verses 1 and 3 and verse 6. With the peace of your brains and your hearts, and I extinguish the chalice, but not its flame, which stands for all of our spirits. May they go forth with you. We will now turn around, the people in the front face the people in the back, and we will sing out, Clary the Flame. Mm-hmm.